Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, Super Tuesday results in an upset on the Mecklenburg County Commission with the Tricia Cotham effect leading to her mother Pat Cotham's defeat. And we'll catch you up on who else won and lost and what it may mean. Plus, Nikki Haley drops out. So now we begin the longest general election presidential race in the nation's history. The drama over racist and homophobic Zoom comments at a recent Matthewstown Commission meeting results in a decision. Katz announces it will proceed with building its new Uptown bus station underground despite a change of plans by the Hornets. Online sports betting is about to start in North Carolina. And when it comes to this week's meeting among Charlotte's mayor and city manager with the mayors in Lake Norman area, mum's the word. But we'll fill you in on what we know. Here to talk about those stories and more is Eli Portillo. He's senior editor for WFAE News. Joe Bruno is a reporter at WSOC-TV and host of their Political Beat program on Sunday mornings at 11:30. Mary C. Curtis is a columnist for RollCall.com and host of their Equal Time podcast. And Eric Spanberg is managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. Welcome to you all. Good morning.
You all. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
Well, yeah, we're going to be, I'm great. We're going to start with Super Tuesday. The voters have spoken and WFAE talked to some of them as they left the polls. We talked to them about their choices and they shared these thoughts.
Definitely voted for President Trump. His policies are great. The country was doing better 3 years ago. And we're just, I'm hopeful that we can return back to that peace and prosperity.
I have some hard feelings towards President Biden and his support of sending arms to Israel and the genocide that's taking place over in Gaza right now.
Age, it does bring a lot of knowledge, and then just his experience. So I really feel confident in another 4 years with having Joe Biden as president.
They all gonna do the same thing, nothing.
Well, for me, it's the local stuff. So my board of commissioners, that was the thing that I came in here knowing that I really wanted to be able to impact the most.
Kind of just nervous in general. Like sometimes when I vote, I wonder if it's going to matter in the end. Like I voted for Tricia Cotham, and that was a huge bummer.
We'll talk about some of the decisions that these voters made in the various races in a moment, but let's start with the presidential race. South Carolina's Nikki Haley won Vermont on Tuesday, but that win, along with the District of Columbia the week before, were the only contest that in which she beat Donald Trump. And so this week she acknowledged the end of her campaign road.
Just last week, my mother, a first-generation immigrant, got to vote for her daughter for president. Only in America. I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in.
So there were those who were thinking and others who were hoping that she would stay in for the longest possible time, but she dropped out this week. Did she do so because the money from the Koch brothers dried up the week before and probably other money was, the brakes were going to be put on the other money flowing in? Or did she do it simply because she saw continuing as a futile exercise? Mary.
I think the latter. She realized that the Republican Party is the party of Trump. It's inevitable. He's very close to having the amount of delegates that he needs to clinch the nomination. And her version of the party, of what she wanted to say, she wanted someone who was younger. She didn't want chaos, and Trump was the chaos candidate. Well, that message did not really resonate with the majority of the Republican voters, the folks who come out for the primary. It's interesting, though, everybody was waiting, is she going to endorse Trump? And she didn't quite, because we've seen that even people like the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has been anti-Trump, claimed, you know, he comes home. And what is going to happen to those voters? And will she eventually endorse Trump?
Well, let's talk about that, because usually when candidates drop out, they do throw their support to the front runner in their party or eventually to the eventual presidential winner of the general election. In her speech, whatever she had to say was somewhat veiled.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
Sounds a little strained there. She did previously pledge support to the Republican Party's eventual nominee. Eli, was that an endorsement? Can we read into those comments that she will eventually support Donald Trump or not?
Read her mind, but I think that was clearly not an endorsement. But if you look at the results from, say, North Carolina and Mecklenburg County, it's clear that her constituency was not there. Even in Mecklenburg County, Trump won that 52-45% of Republican primary voters. And this is a county with tons of unaffiliated voters who could vote in the Republican primary. Excuse me, one of the more liberal and kind of high education suburban voters that Haley chased, and she couldn't win a majority here. So, you know, she's talked a lot about how there's 40% of people, 45% of people, whatever it might be, who don't want Trump. But I mean, when you do the math, it doesn't matter. It's going to be got to be a majority, and she couldn't pull that off in a single county in North Carolina.
And on Super Tuesday, if you look around the country, her margin, she had like 25% of the vote, not 40% of the vote, and he was way up there, Donald Trump was.
Carolina, she got 23%. So.
Okay. Just prior to Super Tuesday, Spectrum News One's Reuben Jones asked Nikki Haley about Trump's plans for new leadership at the Republican National Committee, which I believe took over yesterday. I'm not sure about that. He chose Michael Whatley, the head of the North Carolina GOP, and his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, to co-lead the RNC. And Haley has some misgivings about that.
The idea that he is putting his own person as the head of the party, the idea that his campaign manager is going to run it, the idea that they said the RNC is no longer about winning parties up and down the ticket, it's about Donald Trump.
Doesn't sound like she's going to endorse him. That didn't stop other prominent Republicans throwing their support to Trump, including outgoing Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who previously put the responsibility of January 6th squarely on the former president's shoulders. Is this kind of hypocrisy par for the course in politics, or is it just getting worse?
Eric. Well, let's remember, I believe it was January 6, 2021, when another South Carolina politician, Lindsey Graham, went on the Senate floor and said, Trump and I, we've been through a lot, but this is the end. And, you know, how long was it before Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump were back together? So I don't think it would be shocking, as tepid as her remarks were. It wouldn't be shocking if by the fall she came back and said, I'm voting for Trump. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I wouldn't be shocked, because we've just been through multiple examples of people who were at odds with him who came back and said, I'm on your side.
It's fascinating to me to see how quickly folks that he has insulted them, like Ted Cruz insulted their wives, Lindsey Graham giving out the phone number. He expects that loyalty, but he has none in return. And the fact that the RNC is going to be led by his folks, there is some fear, you know, that they're going to use a lot of that money maybe to find a way to pay some of his legal bills, when it perhaps could be better spent on trying to boost candidates down the ballot, as Nikki Haley, as others have said. But it is there is so much fear of angering Trump's base that, as Eric said, people do fall in line, including people who were at the Capitol on January 6th saying how terrible it was. And now they're trying to you can brush it back.
Eli.
But I think you can see that influence down the ticket here in North Carolina, and that gives you some reasons why people might not want to go against him. In pretty much every contest, you know, where the Council of State, you know, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, whatever it might be on the Republican side, insurance commissioner, education superintendent, the Trumpiest candidate won, and in many cases defeated the favorites of the centrists. So that kind of influence of Trump on the national scene that we've, you know, witnessed for 8+ years now is really down to the state level too. And you see, you know, a candidate like Michelle Murrow for the state superintendent, who, you know, is a homeschool advocate, who has disparaged schools, was, I believe, at the Capitol on January 6th, defeating Kathy Truitt, the Republican incumbent, who, you know, is no liberal, but is, I think, well regarded as a competent, you know, person, and had raised more money, business endorsements, et cetera, was knocked out by the much Trumpier candidate.
We'll see what will happen in November, because in the past elections, some of these very extreme Trump MAGA candidates have not done well and have lost winnable seats. But we will see what will happen in November. You know, we'll be talking about it later, but we'll really see it in North Carolina, that at the top of the ticket has three incredibly conservative folks.
Yeah. And Murrow, although she was at the insurrection at the Capitol, says she did not go into the building. She walked away when she was told she couldn't go in. So that's to her credit, I suppose. But she also has said she will drum CRT out of the schools and a couple of other things that are simply not there. So I wonder what she'll spend her time doing if she wins this race. So last night, the presidential election actually kicked off. Let's be honest about it. Super Tuesday sealed the deal for Donald Trump, and President Biden is the foregone conclusion for the Democrats. And last night he had the State of the Union and address, which is always a big night for any president. And he came out swinging. He went after Republicans. He went after his predecessor. By my count, he mentioned his predecessor about 9 times. And he went after the United States Supreme Court, which seems to be remarkable. Mary, what are your thoughts? How did he do?
Well, I think he came out swinging, and part of it is because people were, let's face it, they weren't just listening to the words. They were looking at his aspect, at his vigor, because it's been dogged, you know, he's too old. Well, he went right at it. He says, I'm old, but my ideas are not. And he said, the other guy, his predecessor, not his name, is just as old, but I believe in the promise of America. And he believes in retribution and revenge. He went at that democracy. You could see the issues that are going to come up. He went at January 6th, and while Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, who voted not to certify, was sitting right behind him with kind of a uncomfortable smirk on his face, I guess. He talked about reproductive rights, and you saw that. And, you know, in the Republican answer, you saw some of the issues they're going to bring up, like the border and other things. But
yes,
I think
one of you brought up his vigor. One of you brought up something interesting about the Republican response. I'm not sure when we started doing this, but having the other party respond, but it's been going on for quite a while. And Senator Katie Britt from Alabama gave that response from her kitchen. I think it was Eric. Are the optics of that good?
No, I don't see how they are in 21st century America. I really don't. I was shocked by that. And the performance has not received exactly rave reviews either. So it was an interesting night all around.
It's too bad that the Emmys aren't on Sunday night. The Oscars are, because it was on television. So she's not eligible for an Oscar, but she might have won Best Actress in an Emmy Award.
We have to take a break.
We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. And when we come back, we'll talk about the governor's race, the lieutenant governor's race, and some of the other down ballot races as well. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on the Local News Roundup on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Eli Portillo, senior editor for WFAE News. Joe Bruno is with us, reporter for WSOC-TV. Eric Spanberg, the Charlotte Business Journal managing editor. And Mary C. Curtis, columnist with RollCall.com and host of their Equal Time podcast. Democratic Attorney General Josh Stein and Republican Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson will be facing each other in November in what promises to be the most closely watched, most expensive governor's race in the country. Any surprises, Joe, about who took the lead in both those contests?
No surprises whatsoever. It's going to be a wild ride until November.
Okay.
It's interesting, though. Mark Robinson now is, if people didn't know who he was, he's been in the New York Times, the Washington Post, all over cable news. It's as though the country is saying, who is this guy? Yes, and well, we all knew who this guy was. And it's amazing.
I want to bring that up, but Eric wants to chime in here, and then we'll talk about that. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was having computer issues. I just wanted to share this one headline from The Guardian that I'm sure some of you saw. Hitler quoting candidate wins North Carolina Republican gubernatorial primary. So as Joe said, it's going to be a wild ride.
Okay. Robinson has made these controversial and often offensive statements about various groups in the past. And now those comments are being dug up, as Mary alluded to, and played on the national media. In March of 2018, he tweeted, quote, "This foolishness about Hitler disarming millions of Jews and then marching them off to concentration camps is a bunch of hogwash." He also advocates a total ban on abortions. He has said that he absolutely wants to, quote, go back to the America where women couldn't vote. He has characterized the civil rights movement as, quote, crap, his word. And he has referred to the victims of the Parkland school shooting as, again, in his words, spoiled little bastards. And on election night, it was comments that, like those, that led the winner on the Democratic side, Josh Stein, to make this statement.
We're at a crossroads, and the choice before us, two competing visions for North Carolina. Mark Robinson's vision is bleak and divisive, consumed by spite and hate.
So the national news has picked up on these comments, and they are beginning to be given airtime nationally to moments like this in his past.
Ain't but two genders. Ain't nothing but men and women. Called to be led by men. When it was time to face down Goliath, sent David, not DeVita, David.
There's no reason anybody anywhere in America should be telling any child about transgenderism, homosexuality, any of that filth. And yes, I called it filth.
We could pass a bill saying you can't have an abortion in North Carolina for any reason.
So this is news to most people on the national scene, and it really doesn't affect them because he's running for the governor of North Carolina. Is it news to North Carolinians? Have people been paying attention, Eli?
I think that it's not news if you have been paying attention, but I also think that we overestimate how many people pay attention to politics in these circles. And by these circles, I mean people like us who are hyper-focused on it. I was talking to some friends I have who are, you know, very well-informed people and, you know, kind of professionals, engaged voters last week before the primary. And they were like, wait, Cooper's not running again. And, you know, that's kind of, I think, a more standard level of engagement. Mark Robinson is trying right now in his public comments, and you saw it in his victory speech on Tuesday, to say, hey, you've heard a lot about me, but you don't know me. He's trying to do that pivot. And he's saying, yeah, I'm a guy who's come up and I'm going to tell you my story now. But he's been such a prolific poster on social media and going to events and making these comments in any forum he can for so long that there are hundreds of examples out there for people to mine for attack ads. So it's going to be tough for him to do that.
And we have been getting these two versions of Mr. Robinson, Lieutenant Governor Robinson. Last year's response to the State of the State address he gave, and it was a very mainstream response. As you mentioned, his acceptance speech on election night was also moderate.
I have an opponent who doesn't understand what it's like to be at work and have the boss man come and take you to a room and sit you down and tell you, we're moving this plant to Mexico and there's nothing you can do about it. And now you have to go find another job. I know the sting. I know the sting of the bad federal policy that causes that. And I'm here for the people of North Carolina for it. Now, people ask me, what's the difference between you and your Democratic challenger? The answer is simple. I'm part of a winning team. He's part of a losing team.
Mary, is he right?
We will see. A lot of Democrats are targeting North Carolina because they're saying, well, will somebody like that on the ticket help the Democrat? Because you have Donald Trump, Mark Robinson, and Dan Bishop, very conservative, and in this case, you know, out there. And while he's trying to tag Josh Stein, he's been a pretty mainstream, low-key attorney general. He has a record. And either way, North Carolina will make history, the first Black governor or the first Jewish governor, which is interesting since so much of what Mark Robinson has said is Holocaust denial and anti-Semitic tapes. So I think Democrats want, I saw Josh Stein on it. He said, I hope the National Democratic Party puts enough money into North Carolina to make a difference in this race because it's going to be tight.
Yeah. Eric.
I think one thing that's interesting about for people who, as Eli said, do not follow this closely is that North Carolina, when it comes to governor's races, has elected Democrats pretty consistently. Going back to the late 80s, I think there have been two Republicans, Governor Martin and Governor McCrory, and everyone else has been a Democrat. So that's a trend to watch as well.
Eli, then Joe. Eli.
Yeah, and I just want to say with all of these things, on Mark Robinson, I think that there is a danger for the Democrats that people just kind of eyes glaze over and it washes over them. I think you've seen some of that with Trump. But if you look at Mark Robinson, it's not just these comments. He's got convictions for writing bad checks and multiple bankruptcies, and he's been sued, and he's got thousands and tens of thousands in liens for unpaid taxes.
Eli.
And at some point, people just go, okay.
Eli, we have a presidential candidate with 91 indictment counts against
and
him.
That's what I'm saying. It's kind of like
leading people, in the polls.
Yeah, at some point, people just say, okay, I know he's a little, okay, whatever.
Joe.
This is going to be a challenging race for Josh Stein. Now, some people, some listeners may have just heard those comments and be like, Josh Stein's going to walk away with this. He's not. Mark Robinson is a force. He is like Trump. He is going to bring new voters to the Republican Party, people who may not normally have voted in that way. He is beloved by his party. He also is going to take a strategy that we kind of saw with Ted Budd in 2022. You are not going to hear from Mark Robinson very often. I wouldn't be surprised if there were no debates. He did no interviews during the primary. I think he will take a similar route in this election where he will have prepared remarks, not a whole lot of interviews. They will try to lay low as much as possible and ride the enthusiasm that he generates in the Republican Party to a victory in November. So Josh Stein really is going to have a tough battle against him.
So
and
when
he
Mark
obliterated his primary opponents, Robinson did. I mean, he had other opponents who brought out these quotes, and they got blown away.
Meanwhile, he's leaving that office, Lieutenant Governor, but that office had several other candidates running to replace him. Democratic State Senator Rachel Hunt, the daughter of multiple-time Governor Jim Hunt, won her primary race for that office with 70% of the Democratic vote, and she had this to say on election night.
There is a lot on the line in November. Tonight, we unite in the fight against the oppressive agenda of the extreme MAGA Republicans in North Carolina.
So her competition in that race on the Republican side has yet to be decided. There's going to be a runoff. Joe, is there a MAGA Republican in the runoff? Who's likely to win that race?
Yeah. We got Hal Weatherman, who was the chief of staff for Dan Forrest, policy guy, knows the office well. And then you have Jim O'Neill, the Forsyth County district attorney who ran for attorney general in 2020 and narrowly lost to Josh Stein. They don't seem nothing really strikes me as unusual about the two candidates. Both seem very competent and capable of handling this role. And I get the impression that if either one of them were to become lieutenant governor, they may take a more policy approach to the office than we may have seen.
Democratic Congressman Jeff Jackson would probably have easily won re-election to Congress had it not been for gerrymandering. He was gerrymandered out of his seat, and so he turned his focus instead to the office of Attorney General. Interestingly enough, Dan Bishop, another congressman, a Republican congressman, also decided not to run for re-election, but he made his own decision not to do so, and he's the other candidate in that race. How is that likely to shape up as we head toward November?
That's a fascinating race. I mean, just what polar opposites you could not have, and that they're both from Mecklenburg County, of course, but, you know, Bishop down the line, MAGA Republican, Jeff Jackson, beloved by progressives, the TikTok videos, the whole, yeah, I guess, sort of quasi political celebrity that goes with it. I think that's going to be a really interesting race that's watched closely.
And this might be, you know, a little too much tea leaf reading this early in it. But, you know, Jeff Jackson is a Democrat from Mecklenburg. Historically, Mecklenburg County has lagged in turnout to other large blue counties. So in a close statewide race, you know, you have to wonder, is there kind of a structural disadvantage that a Mecklenburg Democrat has to overcome as opposed to, say, you know,
How do you explain that when the entire city council, except for two people in Mecklenburg County in Charlotte, is Democrat, when the entire county commission is Democrat, and yet voters don't turn out to elect a Democrat to a statewide race? What's up with that?
Go ahead, Eli. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the turnout in Mecklenburg was really low. And this race, as it's been, I think 19% of eligible voters. If you compare that to other large counties like Buncombe, 29%, Durham, 27%, Wake, 25%, we're below that. And that, you know, people have pointed to and said, like, well, look, there's no presidential race on the Democratic side. It's not really competitive. But that's true in those other big counties, too. So, you know, this has been true for the last several election cycles that Mecklenburg has a Democratic turnout problem. And it's tough to attribute it because if you say, well, it's a diverse county with, you know, more Black and immigrant voters. Well, I mean, look at Durham County. Very similar, much higher turnout. And if you say, well, there's no good down ballot races, there were certainly good down ballot races this time. So it's hard to say.
You're shaking your head or nodding your head vigorously, Joe.
I wholeheartedly agree. Democrats have to figure out the Mecklenburg County problem. Josh Stein, I would have alarm bells going off if I was him in his office, because he's going to really struggle to win as governor if Mecklenburg County lags as much as it really has been the past couple election cycles.
Of the several congressional primaries of note in this area, the District 8 race seems to stand out. It marked a return to politics of the Reverend Mark Harris. Of course, he was embroiled in a ballot fraud controversy in another district several years ago. He himself called for a new election after that came to light and elected not to run in that new election. But just prior to this election, he seemed to pull the Trump card, capital T, Trump card, saying essentially that the race was stolen from him and that, you know, that was really in the past. Well, apparently, voters agreed. 30.4% of them chose him on Tuesday, despite what he characterized as the many forces working against him.
This has really turned out to be my David and Goliath moment, because I found myself in the midst of this campaign out there working, and yet all of the forces that could possibly be arranged were trying to work against us.
Still, he won.
The 8th district people stood up and said, this district is not for sale. Yeah. And you did it. You did it.
What does that mean, this district is not for sale?
I talked to Mark throughout the campaign and also after his victory. And I got the impression he was really beat down by this campaign. And, you know, from the outside looking in, you might think it's because of election fraud, but that was only like a small part of this. He was being attacked on immigration thanks to a 2011 Southern Baptist resolution that, you know, didn't really deal with the things that were being alleged about him. And there were so many mailers criticizing him on the immigration topic in particular, that I think it just really weighed on him, and he experienced levels of attack that he probably didn't expect getting into this race on that issue in particular. Election fraud, you know, he had that kind of Trump-like speech when he launched his campaign, but it really wasn't a key component of why he was running. He didn't try to make his campaign about him coming back to get revenge for having what he thinks was stolen from him in 2018. I did a long interview with him. You know, he kind of danced around the topic, had it both ways, took responsibility, but also questioned whether it needed to happen, the new election. But he also did the interview, which I think that he deserves credit for. He answered every single question at a time where politicians on both sides aren't answering questions. He sat down and answered everything. It's tough to say whether election fraud had a role in his victory. Look at it one way. He got 30.44%. It's only 0.45% more than what is necessary for a second primary. Mecklenburg County, he won liberal Mecklenburg County. And John Bradford, the person that a lot of people thought would be the guy who takes him down, he came in third overall and he lost Mecklenburg County. It's a fascinating race. It probably didn't get enough love from that it deserved because of how fascinating it was. But yeah, Mark Harris will be a congressman.
Eric?
I don't know that you can give credit to someone who essentially rewrites history. I mean, I guess it is good that he did the interview, but let's remember where this started. As you said, Mike, he himself said the race should be rerun and then said he would not run. And now here he is 6 years later saying that he was, he had it stolen from him. I mean, I find that incredible would be too strong a word, but it is just always interesting when people get themselves into trouble. Then if there's a hint of a comeback of being able to get back into the limelight, what they say is, look at me. I have recovered from what was done to me when, in fact, it was something he did. So I think it is very interesting. But, and Joe is right. This race surprisingly did not get as much attention as I would have thought. But now, perhaps with him going to Congress, which seems to be a foregone conclusion, this will become a bigger story in North Carolina.
One of the other politicians that you spent a lot of time talking to, Joe, was Pat Cotham, who lost her reelection to county commission due to the Tricia Cotham effect, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup. Eli Portillo is here from WFAE News. Joe Bruno from WSOC-TV. Mary C. Curtis from Roll Call and Equal Time. And Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal. Before we move on to Pat Cotham, I know, Mary, you want to say something about the U.S. House races.
Yeah, look at all these safe now gerrymandered districts for Republicans in which the very sometimes extreme candidates who won will definitely be going to Washington. This has happened around the country. D.C. is going to have more gridlock because the next House delegation for Republicans will be even more Trump-based than it is now. So Katie barred the door, you know.
There was speculation that Democratic anger over State House Representative Tricia Cotham's defection from the Democratic to the Republican Party last time could possibly filter down to her mother's race for re-election to the Mecklenburg County Commission. And it turns out that concern was warranted. Joe, you spoke with longtime Commissioner Pat Cotham just after that result.
Do you believe you lost your election because your daughter switched political parties?
No, I think that it was many factors.
So she lost to newcomer Yvette Townsend Ingram. What factors did Cotham believe were at play here?
Mainly hate, she thinks. And, you know, I think that could probably be tied to the political party switch. But maybe she thinks that it's just kind of bubbled up more and more over the years. It really is hard not to point that party switch as the key reason why voters supported Townsend Ingram over her. I mean, Pat Cotham was the top vote getter in every single general election. She was on the ballot. And this November, she won't be on the ballot to continue that streak. But she basically described a Democratic Party that she says is more and more moving toward being issue-based instead of people-based. And she says that's kind of not her style. Like, she wants people to look at the big picture, and she's a big picture person about, like, what are you doing to help people and not be focused on one singular issue. And this is all of this, she says, more and more voters of the Democratic Party, I see everybody's hands going up, are out of line with her style.
I want to get back to the fear aspect of this, because she told you and other reporters that we've had on this program in the recent weeks that she's been living in fear ever since her daughter switched parties, especially her grandchildren, because, as she told you, they knew, quote, the Democrats didn't like mommy and were concerned that they would shoot her. Mm. But Pat Cotham also made no apologies for her daughter's decision.
My daughter's a grown woman, and she made a decision that was right for her.
But despite this defeat, she also told you, Joe, that she'd be keeping her feet firmly planted in Democratic territory.
Well, I can tell you that I have been a Democrat my whole life. My term will end at the end of November. I do not plan any changes. I will, when I leave the last board meeting, I will be a Democrat. That's all I can tell you right now.
So for somebody who was defeated after 12 years on county commission, she sounds okay with it. Is that the impression that you got?
Absolutely. I get the impression she's at peace with the loss, and she was prepared for this possibility.
I think Meanwhile, a lot of people who lose those local races are relieved they get their Mondays or Tuesday night back.
I've heard that over and over again. I think we all have, yeah.
So meanwhile, her daughter will be making another run for the State House, this time as a Republican in a Republican-leaning district, but with Democrat Nicole Sidman, who won the Democratic primary in House District 105, gunning for her.
As soon as I mentioned that I was running against Trish Cotham in the fall, animation immediately, and they said, you know, we've got to get this done because it's just not fair what she did.
Sidman is a first-time candidate. She ran a successful state house campaign for Christy Clark back in 2018, however. But to win, Democrats will have to put out an extreme effort, it seems to me, and a lot of money. Is that likely to happen, Eric?
Yes, I think they are. And Joe, as you said, the hands are going to go up around the room again, because Democrats are so motivated. They're so angry about Trisha Cotham switching parties and giving the Republicans a supermajority last year in the House. To go back to what we said about the governor's race, this is going to be a really expensive, intense race.
Okay. It's interesting that Eli was talking about lagging turnout of Democrats. This is a motivating force for so many, and you will see that. Although the Republicans have made the district friendlier, because they don't, I mean, this is a big deal for them too. They don't want the person who switched to give them the supermajority power to lose that seat.
Joe.
Yeah, the Republicans who drew this district found just about every single Republican or possible Republican in Charlotte and put them in this district. But this district is fascinating to me. It voted for Joe Biden it voted for Donald Trump by 2 points. It voted for Roy Cooper by 1 point. It voted for Mark Robinson by 10 points.
That just tells you a lot of people are leaving it blank because they don't know the names.
How do you target the Joe Biden, Mark Robinson voter? Mark Robinson's on the ballot again. Is that going to drive turnout for Trisha Cotham? Like, it is so interesting, this race. And I do think it is going to be very expensive. I think we will see a lot of ads and campaigning, maybe even some prominent national Democrats and Republicans specifically campaigning for this seat. It is going to be really fun to watch and cover.
Okay, we're entering the lightning round for the rest of the program now. We have a lot of things to cover and we have no time. Last week, we reported on the upheaval at a Matthews Town Commission meeting when speakers on Zoom made some comments that were anti-Semitic, homophobic, and bigoted. When one speaker's volume was allegedly turned down, that led to a disagreement between two commissioners about First Amendment rights, and they put an intermission in the proceedings for a while to cool things down. Matthews Mayor John Higdon was out of town during last week's meeting, but this week he had some things to say.
We have, in the last 10 years, have never had anybody come up during the public comment period and spew the kind of garbage that was spoken at our last meeting.
And town commissioners voted unanimously to stop Zoom comments in the future. What else did they decide?
Well, they're putting some guardrails in place. They're going to require speakers to be in person, and they're going to have to provide their address and phone number. It was kind of a free-for-all. I'm surprised that this didn't happen sooner. Charlotte City Council, other municipalities have guardrails in place. Matthews,
but people who speak there normally, I'm told, in person have to give their names and addresses before they speak. And it's something that the mayor says may not eliminate the risk of future tirades, but it may reduce them. And this week, the Zoom speakers, but last week, the Zoom speakers did give their names. One opened by saying he lived in Matthews for about 8 years. It's unclear whether those names were real, of course, and that is why the mayor said the board felt it had to do something.
Exposing Matthews staff members, our residents, and most importantly, our children, to such salacious, disgusting, and hate-filled rhetoric is, in my view, unacceptable. And for us as town leaders to do nothing to try to curb such attacks in the future is a dereliction of our duty.
Joe.
They gave fake names, though. I got the list. One of the names that signed up was a Holocaust denier. The other is a far-left journalist who reports on extremists. This, if they just put the names through Google, they would have known beforehand that this something fishy was up.
Okay. The Hornets recently announced they want to build their new practice facility and pay for it themselves. Wonder of wonders, on a gravel light near the arena and around the Uptown bus station. But after much discussion months ago, the most recent plans had that facility on top of a multi-purpose office tower with the bus station underground. And now Cats CEO Brent Cagle says they're sticking to that part of the plan. So what is the plan now? They're going to put the bus station underground. The Hornets are going to build their facility on the gravel lot. If it is rezoned properly, are they still going to build that office tower?
Well, I think that's the question, is what's going to go in between the underground bus station and, you know, the top of this building. They're still saying that the private developers will have a project. Mike, I think it's probably late breaking news for all of us that work life has changed since COVID, and office space is abundant. So there's not a lot of demand for new office space. So the question is, will the developers want to go in with apartments or retail or a combination of other things, or will they want to wait till conditions are better and they can get some office in there as well? We don't know. We haven't heard from the developer, but Brent Cagle seemed pretty confident that the building blocks are going to keep moving, beginning with a rezoning request and then moving on from there to 30% of design by the end of the year. And that's a typical stage that you see transportation projects go through, 30 and beyond, obviously getting to 100. So they say they're still going to do it.
Eli.
And I think CATS leaders have kind of talked themselves into a box in the last few years because they've repeatedly told city leaders and the public that the bus station, which is only 30 years old, is out of date, unusable, unsafe, needs to be torn down. So now, you know, the Hornets, a key pillar, have pulled out of this mixed use idea, but they're still stuck with this bus station that they've been telling everyone has got to go. So what are they going to do now? Turn around and say, well, actually, it's okay.
Well, let's stick with CATS for a second, Eric. For the last time, I can say these words, these magic words, RATPDEV, because on Monday, the break between CATS and RATPDEV was complete when Brent Cagle introduced Illinois-based National Express Transit to members of Charlotte City Council's Transportation Committee. Their five-year contract actually started last month. What changes is this new arrangement likely to bring?
Well, I think the most striking for those of us that cover transit matters is that we actually saw an executive from the new bus management company speaking to county and city leaders this week. That rarely, if ever, happened. I cannot remember it happening under RATPDEV, your favorite name. And that was part of the issue, as well as bus problems with morale, service, all the things that were happening in the past few years that led to this change in management. The other thing that's important to note is that the new management team that comes in with this company is part of, in essence, the executive leadership team of CATS, and ostensibly will be much more closely involved in all decisions made. So we'll see if that pans out with better results for them.
So a week or so ago, Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiIorio announced that county employees would be returning to the office 5 days a week starting July 1st. But just when you were expecting drive time traffic to increase, some employees came forward at Wednesday's commission meeting asking them to rescind that decision. Among them, Jason Skeen. He's an IT manager with the county.
Cybersecurity is highly competitive space for people. We spent over a year recently trying to recruit for two positions, and both of those candidates who accepted would not have done so if Mecklenburg County did not have a flexible work environment.
And he added,
don't make things harder than they have to be. So don't make things harder than they have to be with regards to recruitment and retention.
So how did commissioners react to this?
They didn't really. They just, you know, accepted the public comments and moved on with their agenda. We asked Mecklenburg County after that meeting if they have any plans to, you know, reconsider or look into how many employees are talking about leaving, all these difficulties employees, and they just referred us to County Manager Dina DiIorio's earlier memo ordering people back to work.
Good news, I guess, for some. Ready, Set, Bet. The online sports betting begins on Monday in North Carolina. It becomes legal. You could pre-register in the last couple of weeks on your phone app so that when Monday hits, you're ready to go. How many people have done that? Do we know?
We don't know, but Mike, I will say the advertising is so subtle. It's hard to really figure out if betting is coming to North Carolina.
It's the topic of conversation, according to one of those commercials. The opening of the state to sports betting just happens to coincide with March Madness and the ACC tournament. Could there be any connection? You decide. And to help you, we will devote an entire hour to sports betting on this program next Tuesday. I will lay odds that Eric Spanberg will be hosting that because I'll be too busy collecting my winnings that morning. not much has been said about this, but the Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles and City Manager Marcus Jones met with the mayors of Lake Norman Towns on Wednesday to talk about the Red Line as talks with Norfolk Southern are beginning to bear fruit. We know that the Red Line is a must if the northern towns are to buy into the transit plan. But there's an NDA involved in Charlotte's talks with Norfolk Southern, so we don't know much. But what do we know about what transpired at that meeting, Joe?
This was a meeting that I was alerted to and just told to, like, note. It's just something to, like, keep an eye on because talks are picking up with Norfolk Southern for Charlotte. And before Charlotte goes too far down this rabbit hole, they really want to make sure that Lake Norman leaders are on board with this potential project.
Of course, the legislature is not on board, and we will need them to be on board if we want to have permission to have the tax increase. They have said we're not focusing enough on roads. So are we just spinning our wheels on this issue?
It is a lot easier to go to the legislature with the backing of all the Lake Norman towns to bring forth a project that has long been promised and will benefit this specific corridor than, say, another light rail project that they may not see the value in.
I have a minute left. For several years, Taiwo Jayoba was the city's planning director. He left. He helped create the UDO and the 2040 plan. He left to become Greensboro city manager. This week, he resigned that position after allegedly violating a city policy. What else do we know about that?
Well, WFDD in Greensboro just posted a story this morning saying that there is evidence that he violated the city's sexual harassment policy, according to city government sources they have, and sent inappropriate messages of a sexual nature to a female employee. I interviewed Taiwo a lot of times while he was here. He always, you know, was very prominent in this city, and people thought he might be the next manager in Charlotte. So it's a very surprising end to his tenure.
And this comes on the heels of reports of a domestic disturbance at his home earlier this year, which they kind of brushed over up in Greensboro. Before we go, I would be remiss if I did not let Joe share his experience with a new beer, wastewater beer. Expand. You have 30 seconds.
Town Brewing and Charlotte Water and Xylem are partnering on a new beer that uses recycled water from the McDowell Water Treatment Plant. This new beer tastes great. The water is heavily treated. You can't tell that you're drinking recycled
water. Wait a minute. All water is recycled. All water is recycled. What's the difference here? Quickly.
Water comes directly from the river and is cleaned. This water comes from the toilets and is cleaned even more.
So it gives new meaning to the term bottoms up. Eli Portillo, Joe Bruno, Mary C. Curtis, Eric Spanberg, thank you all for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.